So let's discuss. We have over here the Omer. During the Omer, there are 50 days of the Omer. Usfat and Lechem Machas Shabbos Chamishim Yom 50 days. In Shulchan Aruch, there are basically two things that we do not do in between Pesach and Shavuos. Two things: marriage, weddings, and taking haircuts. That's really everything. You'll say to me, "What about music?" No, not really. Music. The truth is, music. You're not supposed to listen to music the whole year round. Why? So it's a fair shalach. The Gemara that since the Churban Beis Hamikdash, from the time of the Churban Beis Hamikdash, it was the custom not to listen to music. This was a gezeira she'ein roiv hatzibur yecholim lamayid by. Most of the tzibur is not able to follow such a stringency of not listening to music, whether it's live. Today they'll tell you that recording is controversial. Is it not? Same thing, not the same thing. It's a very difficult thing for most people to handle because people need music to lighten their spirit. So we listen the whole year. However, during times of the year when we are anyway observing laws of Avelus, so then the custom is that we do what we should anyway be doing the whole year. In other words, let's explain. The prohibition, the minhag of not listening to music is not the same as not taking a haircut and not getting married. Because the truth is, since the Churban Beis HaMikdash, you're not supposed to listen to music the entire year, never. The only reason why we do listen to music is because it's too difficult. It's a gezeira she'ein roiv hatzibur yecholim la'amod bo. It is an enactment which is too difficult for the majority of the tzibur to obey, and therefore it has not taken hold. It has not been accepted. However, there are times of the year when we are in a state of mourning. For example, the 3 weeks, or at least the 9 days leading up to Tisha B'Av, and this period of the year between Pesach and Shavuos, when we mourn to a degree the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. So since anyway we are restricted, so now it became the custom to do during this time of the year the things that we should really be doing the whole year. Now, the whole year, there's no such thing as not getting married and not taking a haircut. That's ridiculous. The whole year, you are 100% permitted and advised to engage in these things. But during this time, we're not allowed to, for Avelos. Once we're engaged in these things, so then we are already going to accept and not listen to music, not because it's a special takana not to listen to music. It's just that we're now gonna shape up. We're gonna be doing things in any way we should not be doing the rest of the year. So we talk about music. Music, I'm not even sure it's recorded in Shulchan Aruch. The prohibition not to listen to music is I don't think it's recorded at all. We don't do it. It's a custom. We have to appreciate where it comes from. It's not because of the time. It's because it's just a general. We're whipped into shape during this time, things that we really should do the whole year. But the primary restrictions of this time of the year are two: haircuts and marriage. And the question is why? Why are these two events so significant that this is the model, this is the thing which is going to cause us to remember what happened during this time of the year? Before we proceed, we have to be very careful and understand that when we talk about the Talmidei of Rabbi Akiva dying this time of the year because they were not noye kovoid ze lo ze, that is not the only reason. There are really many reasons why we don't engage in these activities. Among those reasons are, it's a time of judgment. It's a time of judgment. Just like Rosh Hashanah is a time of judgment, mi yichye mi yamos, it's a time when the peiros of the world and the tevuah between Pesach and Shavuos, there are two judgments taking place in heaven. The tevuah how much produce will grow, number one. Number two, the peiros ilan, basically the scope of all things that the earth produces, whether it's fruits, vegetables, grains, the produce of the earth is subject to judgment in Shemayim. We are accustomed, we think that the judgment takes place on Pesach and the judgment for Tevuah and the judgment for Peros takes place on Shavuos. Chazal seem to fudge it. It's not a set day. It's more of a tekufa. It's a time period. It starts with the Tevuah on Pesach. It ends with the Peros on Shavuos. It's a 50-day period of discussion. It's like a trial, like, you know, they have these celebrity trials. Floyd, right? Every day you have to read the news. What happened today in the court? What video did they show? What happened here? What happened there? What did this guy, what did that guy say? It's a process. It's a process. It's a 50-day process where in Shemayim there is judgment, and we are going to be the ramifications of what the earth will produce will affect us directly. So therefore, let's not get carried away during this time by forgetting. Keep your eye on the ball. Don't engage in weddings. Weddings are very distracting. Very distracting. You have to make enormous amounts of preparation. Okay, I have a wedding tonight. Okay, during the you're not supposed to go to weddings. The wedding tonight. So I happen to know the Kalas family very well, and it's I know for a fact because I know them. They're very distracted. The preparations and all of the arrangements, they're overwhelmed. It's an overwhelming experience to get yourself ready. And the guests also, it's a very big, you know, the people who come. Some people come with a lishma, and some people it's a burden to come, but it's a distraction from what's important. There's a time of judgment. Chazal said, no weddings. That's another reason. It's not just because of the mourning of the Talmid Rabbi Akiva. Then there is another very classic reason given why we do not engage in these things, because it's Zecher L'Chorban. Being that this mitzvah of counting the Omer begins on Pesach and concludes on Shavuos, which is sandwiched with a special service in the Beis HaMikdash, the service of the Beis HaMikdash is to bring the Omer, and then to count 50 days to bring the Shtei HaLechem, and these are major services in that are focused thoroughly on the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, it forces us to reflect on the fact that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash.
Don't we learn clearly that there's a 33-day period?
Okay, we'll discuss that. Okay, we're going to discuss that in one moment. But right now, let's just get the basic reasons why there is Avelis. And then the question is, how many of these days must the person observe the Avelis? But let's just get the basic reasons. There are three basic reasons as to why we observe Avelis during this time period. Number one, it was during this time that Rabbi Akiva, 22,000 Talmidei Rabbi Akiva passed away. Because they were 24,000 Talmidei Rabbi Akiva passed away because they were not noyeg, kavod, zealous, they did not show each other proper respect. Derech Eretz, Kodmo, La Torah. And therefore, even though it's been about 2,000 years, we observe, we mourn, we reflect upon the danger of Talmidei Chachamim not having proper Derech Eretz, Zelazeh. Number two, it is a time of judgment in between Pesach and Shavuos. In Shemayim, we have a tradition that the world is being judged for the grain and for the fruits. Number three, it is a zecher l'chorban. If you have such a mitzvah, when you count every single day, 50 days, from one day to the next, from one day, there's a time of judgment, and you reflect upon the Beis HaMikdash, the bringing of the Omer, and the conclusion, and the finale that leads into the Shtei HaLechem, it's sandwiched in two major, major events that focus specifically on the Beis HaMikdash. I also should appreciate that when you bring the Omer, that's when you begin to bring the Bikurim. And the Bikurim is where you come and you present your first fruits before the Mizbeach. Every farmer brings his fruits to the Mizbeach, and that's not going to happen. It was a countdown to the beginning of the Yom HaBikurim. Be'akarivchem mincho chadosh l'Hashem b'shavu oseichem. The day that the finale of the 50 days of counting is called in the Torah the day of the Bikurim, when every single farmer would come to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Mizbech, and present his fruits, and that cannot be done. So basically, when you really study the significance of the Sefira from beginning to end, it's all about the Beis HaMikdash. And if there is no Beis HaMikdash, then Chazal said you have to reflect. And the way you reflect is, do not engage in celebration, engage in elements of mourning. Now, is it really called mourning? Because those are three reasons. I want to give you another reason, and then we'll discuss some of it. I want to give you another, which is a little bit off the beaten track, a fourth reason why we do not engage in activities. And that is, there's a principle called Ein HaBracha Mitzuya Ela B'davar HaSamui Min Ha'ayin. This is a basic principle throughout the entire Chazal, that blessing is only found in things that are not defined. Abstractions. Maral. Okay, Amachol, maral is abstract. By definition, someone asked me, what's the difference between Rav Meir and Rav Meir? Let me see if Rav Meir agrees to this principle. Someone on Pesach asked me a question. He thinks I'm a Chaim Berliner. I told him I'm not. He thinks I am. So I told him, he said to me, what is the difference between Pachad Yitzchak and the Torah of Moshe Shapiro? Okay, what's the difference? So I told him, right? Okay, so I can
get through Moshe Shapiro. Moshe Shapiro, but I can't get through.
Rav Michal said that he can get through the Torah of Moshe Shapiro, but he can't get through a Maimer in Pachad Yitzchak. They're very similar. They both are morale, very, very heavily steeped in morale. So I told him the difference is very simple. Pachad Yitzchak, by design, is abstract. It's abstract. The Pachad Yitzchak will never leave you at the end with a concrete, tangible vart to a large degree. It's following in the style of the maral, who by definition, by design, prefers abstraction. Pachad Yitzchak also, it's an expansion upon the maral, but by design, this abstraction. It's not defined. Rav Moshe Shapiro, there's a bottom line,
yeah.
Sign the dotted line. There. It starts off with the same principles, but it ultimately takes you down a path where you have something that you can hold on to and you can define. Okay, there's something about abstractions. Now, why then did the Pachad Yitzchak? Why was he so enamored with the maral? Why did the maral capture the imagination of the world? The morale became a mamash. You know, the morale is a sensation in the entire world by many, many camps. The answer is, there is something very satisfying about abstractions. This is a psychological principle. There is something very satisfying when you cannot hold you down to something very specific.
Yeah, but most people can only take it in very
right.
small doses.
I can't take it either. I'm not a morale person. It's only for a certain type of mind like yours. Now, where does that come from? Where does that come from, that principle that abstractions are beneficial? It's a chazal. Chazal say, Ein habrocha mitzuya, ela bidavar hasamui min ha'ayin. Blessing. The flourishing of blessing, the unlimited possibilities are only found in something which is not defined. Bedavar, a matter hasamui, that is concealed from the eye, which simply means if something has a textbook definition, you're limited. That's the end, the end. I have a word, I have three letters. You go to an English dictionary, the Oxford Unabridged Dictionary of the English Language, and you have a sequence of letters, and you open up the dictionary, you find those letters, it gives you, this is the definition, the end. Memorize it, and that's the end. There's nothing more to discuss. I have a definition, I memorized the entire unabridged edition of the Oxford Dictionary of the English Language, and I can close the dictionary and go home and go to sleep. There's nothing more to do. But if you study Lashon HaKodesh, you're not going to sleep. Even though the language, the number of words in the Hebrew language is a fraction of the number of words in many other languages, the words are not defined. The definition, the textbook definition of many words are abstractions. It's a sequence of letters which captures a basic theme, and it's manipulated and adapts to the context of how it's used. It's a whole different ball game. And because it's not defined and limited, it opens up unlimited possibilities. That's called bracha. Bracha is a spring, a fountain. There's an unlimited flow. When something is defined, limited, that's it. There's nothing, it's finite. When something is abstract, it allows itself to expand and to blossom. So that's the basic principle. Now I'll give you some examples. Let me give you some examples. How many mitzvahs are there in the Torah? Well, everyone knows it's a Gemara. It's a Gemara. It's a Farish Gemara. It's not a Hasidish of art. Chazal say there are Taryag mitzvahs. 613 mitzvahs. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I would say that's a very bad thing. Because if you're going to tell me that the Torah has exactly 613 mitzvahs, then the Torah has no bracha, chas v'shalom. It's a bekursus. Because ein habracha mitzuya ella bedavar hasam min ayin. When something is counted and is finite, that's it. You're limiting the scope of the Torah to 613. Isn't that a problem? Doesn't that appear to be a very big problem? Why? What would have been so terrible if Chazal would omit any counting of the mitzvah? They would just say that there's a Torah, whatever there is, there are mitzvahs. Go read the Torah. Who's asking you to count? Well, obviously there are limited number of mitzvahs. You go through for Bereishis till the end of the Torah. Obviously there are numbers. I guess there has to be, because if you're going from the Bereishis to the Zos HaTorah, you have to figure out. And Chazal said, we figured it out for you, and there are 613. That's what it says. But that's a problem. That's a problem. Because that goes up against Chazal's own words, who tell us, Ein habrocha mitzuya ella bedover hasam min ayin. By them limiting the number of mitzvos to a set amount, you're diminishing from the blessing of the ultimate blessing of the Torah. How do you understand this? So you know what the answer is? The answer is, okay, Chazal told us 613. What are they? Oh, you want to know what are they? Okay, well, the Rambam has a Sefer devoted just to this. The Sefer HaMitzvahs. He will enumerate the 613. Guess what? The Ramban disagrees. The Ramban, what the Rambam counts as a mitzvah, the Ramban does not count as a mitzvah.
I think.
Yeah.
The average Jew, not the, you know.
Yeah.
Needs to be able to get his head around.
Okay, fine.
The idea that, you know.
Okay.
There's something finite that I can work towards. I mean, that's why you have, you know,
goals.
Boiled it down to look, down to 7 and 3 and 1. That's why you have codification of halacha.
Chazal said, "Lama nikru talmidei chachamim soifrim." Why are they called counters, scribes? The word soif means a counter, because that's a very good thing to count. Counting is a very good thing, but on the other hand, when you count something, you're limiting the scope. Okay, it's problematic. How many mitzvos are there? Well, guess what? The Rambam has his list. The Ramban has a different list. The Sefer HaChinuch, very, very popular, has a different list. The Bahag, which is an acronym for the Baal Halachos Gedolos, has a different list. The Smag, the Sefer, there's the Bahag, and then there is the Sefer Mitzvahs Ketanois, the Sefer Mitzvahs Gedolois. There are numerous Rishonim who have attempted to enumerate exactly what are the Taryag Mitzvahs. And there is no agreement whatsoever. There is major, major controversy and major dispute amongst all of the Rishonim as to the precise list of the 613 mitzvahs. Why? Why couldn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu present us with a Torah that's ordered? Aleph, this is the first mitzvah. Beis, this is the second mitzvah. Gimel, why is the Torah written in such a way which lends itself to so much confusion as to the definition of the Tayag mitzvahs? Hashem, the Torah is divine, so just give us something that is ordered. Today, if you present a document in court, you have to be clear. You have to have a list. You have to have numbers. You have to have clarity in what you're doing. You can't go just give me a stream of text and you figure out what the Tayag mitzvahs are. Yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah in such a way, there's a stream of text, you figure out what the mitzvahs are, what the Tayag mitzvahs are. And because it's not so simple, there is no agreement amongst the Rishonim as to the precise list. That is by design. That it should not be defined. Because that restores the blessing. Ein habracha mitzuya ela bedavar hasamay min ha'ayin. On the one hand, the Torah is limited, it's finite, because, you know, there are only that many columns, that many words. There are, 300 and something thousand letters. There are 245 columns. The text of the Torah is defined. But when you want to understand the commandments, it's not defined. We know there are 613 mitzvahs, but it's impossible to define what they are. And the proof is the Chinuch and the Rambam, the Ramban, and the Baal Halachas Gedolos, and the Baal Halachas Ketanos, and the Sefer Mitzvahs Gedolos, they don't agree with each other. And the difference between them is vast. Why? By design. Because if it was clearly defined, that takes away from the blessing. When something is abstract, that allows itself to take on a life of its own with no limitation whatsoever. I'll give you another example. There are Yud Gimel Midos of Rachamim. Hashem, Hashem, we went to the whole shiur on this. Hashem, Hashem, Kel Rachum, Lechadre Chapayim, Rav Chesav Yemes, Noitzer Chesel, Lo Alofim, Noitzer Alofesh, Vachtov and Akei. Can anyone here clearly define for me what are the Yud Gimel, the 13 attributes of mercy? You can't. Because there are at least 10 Rishonim who disagree as to what they are. And the only way you'll have all of them is if you'll say all the psukim, the whole section, because every one of the commentators has a different interpretation. So it's not defined. Why is it not? Why can't Hashem just give you a list? Number one, this is Rachum. Number two is Chanun. Number three, Erech Apan. Why couldn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu just clearly define what the Yud, Gimel, Midas, Rachamim are? And the answer is because Hashem would define what the Yigim Musarachim are. It would take away from the blessing.
So the Aseres Hadibros is
The Aseres or Mary, what are the Aseres Hadibros? It's a very good question. The Aseres Hadibros seemingly are defined. Or are they?
They are defined, so maybe that's why it's bad.
No, they're not. It's
machlokes. What the Aseres Hadibros? Okay, Rabbi Yossi, what are the Ten Commandments? Okay, there are not Ten Commandments. There are Ten Divos.
In other words, which are the Ten Commandments?
Okay,
it's a machlokes. So really,
it's not really defined, and maybe for that reason, the element of that, the fact that it is defined, is what allowed this element that it is defined to a degree. Maybe that's what allowed it to be shattered. How could it be the haluchos masil kimema the amichta masil kim? It was shattered. How could it be shattered? The work of God, when you take the work of God and you limit it, you confine it, you take away the blessing.
You made a lot of
blessings. You shatter it. When you take away the blessing, it's problematic. Okay, There are other examples. What other examples are there? Let's even the Midosh Atar Nidreshes. That's not so simple. The cloud.
Just give you one. I'll give you one example. The Abarbanel says Anochi Hashem Elokecha is not one of the Aseres HaDibros.
Exactly.
It's an introduction to the Aseres HaDibros.
So you see, it's not defined. Everything. The more that something is abstract, the more it allows. That's the goal. The goal is Ein Habrocha Mitsuya El B'Davar Hasamin Ayin. Now, there are other examples of this idea, which I don't recall this moment, but there are many examples of this idea. Now, how does it apply to the sphere? The reason why these days are dangerous times, these days, is because we're counting the days. We're counting. Any time you count, you're taking away protection. The time of the Omer, 1, 2, 3, 4, we're counting from Pesach until Shavuos. Oho, you're counting? That's not a good idea. People don't count their children. You know, they don't count. You don't count. When you start counting, Ein habracha mitzuya ella bedavar hasamay min ha'ayin. This time of the year is a dangerous time. It's a dangerous time because it is a time when we are coming to limit, to define time. And perhaps it's for that reason I want to suggest to you, we don't count day number 50. Why? It doesn't make any sense. Why don't we count day number 50? It says, Usfartim lechem imacharas ha-shabbos, miyoyim ha-avichem es-omer, sheva shabbos, I forgot the whole passage, tisperu chamishim yoyim, you shall count 50 days. It says explicitly in the Torah. Did you ever go to a shul on the night of Shavuos? Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokim Melech Olam Hashem, Kedoshim Mitzvos, Mitzvanu Al Sviras Omer, Hayoim Chamishim Yoim Ba'Omer. Did you ever go to such a shul? It's 7 weeks in one day. Shehem Shiva Shavuos.
Yeah, actually, I heard it. The guy they wanted him to. He wanted all these years they should be mechabed him with the bracha. So they did it on Shavuos night. I was there. I was the Balkari in that shul. And he went ahead and made a bracha.
Yeah.
Yom Kamim Shimyom.
I heard
they
that
never
also.
Thought he would do it. They didn't think he was that stupid.
I heard a story. I heard such a story as well. Someone who was there in a certain yeshiva, he told me there was a new bracha there, and he was like, whatever. And they told him we're mechabed you, and he did it. He did it b'shem u'malchus. He did not know they were setting him up. Okay, but you don't do that. That's not nice.
But that's why, by the way, that's why Shavuos is not called in the Torah Zman Matan Torah Seder.
Okay, that's a different
right. The Torah
doesn't refer to it. Okay. But we don't count. Why not? The Torah says Tisperu Chamishim Yom. Count 50 days. So what's so terrible to count day 50? Maybe you don't count. You're not going to say 7 weeks and one day because the Torah only says 7 weeks. So we'll count 49 and we'll count the weeks. But when we get day 50, count 50. So what's the answer? The answer is that you don't count the total amount because it takes away from the blessing. It's obvious. If yesterday was 49, that means today is 50. So it's as if we've counted 50 days. But you don't want to say it. Because if you say it, you are limiting the blessing. You are removing the principle of Ein Habrocha Mitsuya Ella Bedavar Hasamay Min Ha'ayin. If you are going to prepare with your mouth, explicitly define this time, that's not a good thing. These days, let's put aside the Avelus of Rabbi Akiva. Let's put aside the Avelus of the Beis HaMikdash. Let's put aside the Zman of Din on Tavu, on the Peros Ilan. It's another time. It's just not a good time. It's not a good time during the year when time is defined. No one likes to be asked, how old are you? No one likes that. No one likes it. It's not a pleasant question to hear. How old are you? Mind your own business. Why do you have to know how old I am? I don't know, by the goyim, you know, they live in the crazy, the goyim there, you know, they walk around without clothing also. there, you know, everything is the age. They have, every time they in the newspaper, typically, every time they refer to a person, they write their name and their age. You notice that. Many, many newspapers. The person is only defined by their age. Who's asking you? What do you have to go? How do you, people don't like that. When you limit something, it's a limit. We don't count 50. But the fact is we are counting. It's not a good time. And if it's not a good time, you know, maybe it's not the best thing now to get married. It's not a good simit. Actually, you mentioned this concept that the reason why a person doesn't get married is not because of real mourning. To prove this point, there are some commentators that explain as follows. How could Chazal tell people not to get married during this time of the year? Marriage is the most fundamental mitzvah in the Torah. L'toyu bara, l'sheves yotzara. So maybe I can understand that if a person already has children, was already married, and now he's just getting married for companionship, he's not getting married for children. Okay, so maybe I can understand. Even that's hard to understand because without Chazal said, a person doesn't have a wife. You know, he can do averus. So he needs to be, even that you can say, you know, there's an unlimited number of Mamari Chazal telling a person that without a wife, you know, you're finished. But certain Hasidim, they see a guy who's not married, you know, this guy is like poison. Anyone who's not married is a choyte or machle asa'olam, v'chul v'chul. So even if you already have children and the person is just getting married for companionship, even there you can argue, excuse me, you know, I'm not allowed to breathe. I'm not allowed to breathe during the Svira. I'm not allowed to eat. I'm not allowed to go live. Of course. So marriage is part of life. What's the big deal? And certainly, a person who is not yet mekayim the mitzvah of pre-revia, everyone knows how delicate shidduchim are. If you don't chap now, if you don't have an opportunity to get married, you know, you wait one day, boom, you know, who knows what could happen to you. You end up 20 years later and you find yourself stuck. So how could Chazal go along and make such a rule to prevent people from getting married for 50 days? It's shocking. It's shocking. And they ask this question, the commentator asks this question, and the answer is something even more shocking. They say, you don't get married. Gesund eight. The Chazal never made a takana not to get married. The takana was, it's just not a good time to get married. If you really want to get married, get good, get married. There's a principle that it's not a good simon. On the night of Rosh Hashanah, we do simonim. We want to start the year off with a good sign, simone milsa. It's just not a good time to get married because during this time, the Talmidim, Rabbi Kiva died. It's a time of din. It's a time of avelus of the Beis HaMikdash. It's not a good simon. There's nothing wrong with getting married. That's not part of the rules of Avelos. Adarabah, they are sending the halachs of a person as a plane to get married, and the Rachmanotan becomes an Ovel. The Gemara says, Beferish. First get married and observe the 7 days of Shiva Simei HaMishta, and then you'll observe the Avelos. So we do see that people can get married during Avelos. It's not the end of the world. But l'chadchila, to get married during a time that's not misugal, it's not a good simon, that might not be the best idea. So I'm suggesting to you over here is, along those lines, the reason why there's no marriage during this period of time is because it's just not a good time when you're involved in counting. Counting is a time that takes away bracha. Dover has some amino ayin. Okay, that's one idea. I want to tell you some other controversial ideas. Other things out off the beaten track. I think Mayor is going to like this one. This is an idea, very interesting. This is an idea which I think is a little bit different. Why is the focus on marriage? So the first reason given is because there are 24,000 Talmidei Rabbi Akiva, they died. Now let's understand something. Rabbi Akiva, what was his relationship with his wife, Rachel? Rabbi Akiva was married 3 times, by the way. He was married 3 times. Married to Rachel. To, I don't remember, whatever, I don't remember, I'm not going to say something, I'm making it. He was married 3 times, okay, but he was married for at least 24 years to this woman called Rachel. He married her, she was the daughter of Kalba Savua. He's married to the daughter of Kalba Savua, and his wife said, you know, I can't marry an ignoramus. if you will promise to go and learn Torah, I'll marry you. So he, okay, fine. He marries her, he learns, and at some point in time, he says he has to go into his baididus. He has to go away to learn for alone. So he went away for 12 years. That's quite a sacrifice for his wife to be alone for 12 years. 12 years for a woman to be all alone. And it's not like today. Today you have a smartphone, and you have WhatsApp, and you have Instagram, and you have Zoom and YouTube. Okay, there's this massive social network where you can keep yourself busy, Yom Valayla. Talking about ancient times, a woman, there's no welfare program, there's no support from the community. How did she survive for 12 years? It's unbelievable. It's not to be believed that a woman can say to her husband, go learn for 12 years, and I'll sit here all alone, look at the walls, and miraculously somehow support myself for 12 years without you, and support you. It's not to be believed. And she did that. After 12 years, he comes back home. He bangs on the door, and as he comes near the door, he hears a person tormenting his wife and saying to her, what kind of husband do you have? What kind of guy is this? He abandons you. He runs away. He leaves you here all alone. What kind of person is this? What kind of husband did you marry? He's such a horrible person. And she, not knowing that he's outside the door, she defends him and says, this is my mission in life, that my husband should be able to learn Torah. And if it was up to me, I would prefer he go back for another 12 years into isolation, bidud, and learn Torah.
Did she have children with him?
I don't know.
Yeah. One child.
One child? Okay.
Yeah.
Before or after?
Whatever. I don't know. I think before? I don't know. The child didn't recognize him when he came back.
What was his name?
The Gemara talks about it. The Gemara told the child didn't recognize him. Whatever. But that's not the point. So he hears his wife say these words. And he says, Ebaze, my wife says I go away for another 12 years, I'm going to go. He doesn't even enter his home. He does not even walk in. He makes an about face, goes back to the Beis Medrash and sits and learns for another 12 years. 12 years later, now after 24 years, he comes back home, but he doesn't come back empty-handed. He comes back accompanied by 24,000 Talmidim. And his wife sees him. And she runs to him. She bows down to him. She grabs his foot, kisses his toes. And there was a kanoi, one of the briskas, saw a woman, an isha. An isha is like a Martian. An isha. One of those, like a fly. An isha, a wasp. Grabbing onto his leg. And he takes out his fly swatter. Away! Don't go near the Rebbe. Don't go near the Rebbe. Remove yourself from the Rebbe. And Rabbi Akiva says to the student, Mechutzef, put down your stick. This is my wife. Everything that I have and everything that you have is only because of her. Have respect. So Rabbi Akiva comes back now with 24,000 students. Who's the one who suffered for 24 years? Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva's wife. Rabbi Akiva's wife was an aguna, mamish, a living aguna for 24 years. Not like today in this modern world where you can entertain yourself with who knows what. We can't even begin to fathom the bezyonis and the isolation, the loneliness, the suffering of what she endured for 24 years. I mean, it's not to be believed. Okay? Now, guess, so what does she have to show for it? 24,000 Talmidim. That's impressive. Now, what happens? All of a sudden, one day, Rabbi Akiva gets a message that one of his Talmidim has been taken away by Hatzalah to Maimonides. He has corona. The next day, there's a levaya. And then another student dies. Pandemic. And before you blink, all 24,000 Talmidim are dead. They're in the ground. So what happens now? Here's the point I want to make. How does Rochel feel about this? How does Rabbi Akiva's wife feel about this? The average guy, he reads the newspaper, says in the newspaper, look at that. Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim, 24,000 people, they all died. It's not okay me. I'm not from his Talmidim. You know, we have a population over here in America, 320 million people. So 24,000 is a drop in the bucket. Who cares? Not me. Not me. What do I care? Who cares? Another guy, who cares? No. They were not noy kovetzelos. Good for them. Good for them. They're always nasty people out there. They say the stupidest things and the most nasty, insensitive things. A dime a dozen of those type of people out there who have absolutely no... But who cares? Who suffered the most from the death of the 24,000 Talmidim? Beyond the question, beyond off the charts. The wife of Rabbi Akiva. Because the only reason she endured the loneliness of not of being away from her husband for 24 years was to produce 24,000 Talmidim. This is the crown jewel of my suffering. And now that crown jewel is gone. So it comes out retroactively, I suffered for nothing. Now you can't say that. That's of course is to say, but let's exaggerate a little bit over here to bring out the point. How do you think that she felt, the wife of Rabbi Akiva? I suffered for nothing. I got married to a man, I invested in him, and my husband was a miserable failure. Miserable failure. I gave him 24 years of my life so he can produce 24,000 Talmidim, and all of those were rejected by Hashem and they all died because he did not teach them how to be noy kovet zeh lazeh. So the one who suffered the most was the wife of Rabbi Akiva. I entered into a marriage and I gave up of myself for this. The reason why we don't marry, I told you, it's very bizarre. Two things you don't do, haircuts and marriage. Where does this come from? You can go give a million things not to. We shouldn't eat meat. We shouldn't, you can come up with many different things you should not do in order to show up. Marriage, you can't, not the marriage. People need to get married. That's part of the world. Kachi Darko Shalom is the mitzvah of El Sheves Yitzara. Why marriage? You know why? Because we pay tribute not to the students. We pay tribute to Rabbi Akiva's wife. Rabbi Akiva's wife entered into a marriage, and because they were not noy kavod zeh lazeh, her marriage, her experience was for nothing. Kaviyachol was for nothing. So her marriage was for nothing. So you know what? You don't get married either. Feel the pain of loneliness. You also feel that pain. During these 50, you want to get married. You found the kala. You found the chassan. You want to get married? You know what? Don't get married. Don't get married. Be alone. Be just like Rabbi Akiva's wife. She was alone. Her marriage wasn't even a marriage. What kind of marriage is this? Apam yilove ishi elai. Marriage is about companionship. My husband will be joined to me. You don't get married either. Feel her pain. By you restraining yourself from marriage, you are reenacting the tsar of Rabbi Akiva's wife in how could it be the purpose of my marriage? The purpose of my marriage resulted in nothing because the Talmidim did not give kavod zeh lazeh. Okay, so this is my suggestion as to why specifically marriage, it's more of a tribute to the wife of Rabbi Akiva.
Who says this? You?
The Koilo.
Huh?
The Koilo. Okay, that's one controversial idea. I want to tell you another idea. This is not my idea. This I find to be mind-boggling, this idea. It came across over here in the Sefer called the Avnei Shoyim. This is another incredible Kabbalah which totally changed the equation of everything. And it's more of a, like a drush. So it's a little bit of a drush. In Klal Yisrael, there are basically, I mean, I don't know how, this is all Kabbalah, there are 600,000 neshamas. Right? That's the big number. That's the big number. The number we always work with is Shishim Riboy. Now, you'll tell me, but today there are 15 million Jews, and that's only right now, and every generation. All right, whatever that means. But there's a number. The number is Shishim Riboy. There's Beferish Gemara. The Gemara talks about Chin Chabonim. And the Gemara is incredible. The Gemara talks about how many students is the max. Is the max for a Rebbe. How many students do you give a teacher? What is the maximum number of students that a Rebbe, the Tinoika Shel Beis Shavim, the Dar Dikein, that a Rebbe is able to handle? Once you get past a certain threshold, the Rebbe no longer has a grasp on his student. It's not possible for him to devote his attention to the individual needs of every single student. And it's made this number they use in the Gemara, it's Mamish, it's used today in the whole world, secular world as well. And the Gemara says 25. It's a Farish Gemara. The rule is one Rebbe can deal with 25 students. Bidiyavet, up to 50. But once you get to 50, 5-0, no more. If you have 50 students, you have to break it up into two rebbeim. You need two. You're wasting your time. Two chaburis. One rebbe cannot teach 50 students. It's impossible. B'shas hadchak, he can teach 49. But he cannot teach 50. And the ideal number is 25. Now, take the number 600,000. Divide it. Everyone in Klal Yisrael is a drush. It's not an accurate, because the numbers really don't make sense, don't really work out, but it's a drush. It's a drush. Take it what it's worth. Everyone in Klal Yisrael needs a Rebbe. You have a Rebbe, a Chassidish Rebbe, you have a Rav. Everyone needs a Rebbe on your Shidduch resume. Who's your Moira Hora? Who's your Rebbe? Who's, you know, who do you ask your Shilas by? Who do you listen to? Who are you afraid of? These are all very valid questions. The person, you always want to know, who is your authority in life? Every religious Jew needs an authority. If you live a life of hefkeirus, I'm not afraid of anyone, don't tell me what to do, you're in a lot of trouble. It's a very dangerous life. It's good to have someone who you're afraid of, who you're afraid of that you have no choice, you have to listen to. Everyone needs someone like that. It's unfortunate that most people don't have someone like that. Some people do, some don't. But ideally, yes. Take the number 600,000 and divide it by 25. What's the result? 24,000. When Rabbi Akiva came back after 24 years with 24,000 students, what did he come back with? He produced Milamdim for the entire Klal Yisrael. When we talk about the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, they died, we mourn. Come on, it's been 2,000 years. Was still mourning for them? Really? Avelus Yeshana, even for the Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara says, you know, it's an Avelus Yeshana. Get over it. Move on. What are we mourning still today? Adayom Azifa, 24,000 Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. What's this all about? 24,000 young people, they died. So no, it's a tragedy beyond any shadow of a doubt. But why? The answer is, these were not ordinary Talmidei. These were milamdim. These were the teachers of Klal Yisrael. 600,000 divided by 25, which is the Farish of Gemara. I need to find you the Gemara. The Gemara in Bava Basra. And Daf Chof Aleph Omid Aleph. The Sach Makarei Dardiki Havi Eshin V'chamisha Yinuke. The Gemara there says that the proper number is 25 students per teacher. 600,000 divided by 25 is 24,000. Rabbi Akiva produced melamdim, teachers of Klal Yisrael. V'hoyu einecha rohois es mirecha. You're supposed to look at your teacher. You're supposed to learn from the teacher. They died. That's a tragedy. That's a real tragedy. When the leadership, not just the literally leadership, it's the melamdim. The teachers, Jewish continuity is all about Jewish education. Everyone knows that. Jewish education is one of the essential ingredients of Jewish continuity. You can't have Jewish education unless you have teachers. I mean, that's no aleph beis. Even in America, they talk about teachers, you know, they get the vaccine first. Cut the line. Everything about teachers, even though the teachers don't want to go teach anymore, the union says no more teaching anymore. Right? But in any event, it's a steer. How could they get the vaccine first when they don't teach? Right? Not fair. Contradiction. A lot of contradictions. But in any event, you have the melamdim pit. That's a whole different ballgame. That is an entirely different ballgame when a melamed dies. What was the other question? And I told you before, the other issue of haircuts. Why haircuts? Who cares? What is it about haircuts that became the focus? When I told you the other idea, I don't have really an explanation when it came to the Rachel focusing on the suffering of Akiva's wife. But here it makes a lot of sense because one of the terms that Chazal used to describe teachers is V'hoyu einecha ro'ois esmarecha. Your eyes shall behold your teachers. When it comes to looking, you're supposed to, when you look at someone, the person that you're looking at should be beautiful. Melech biyofioi sechezena einecha. The king in his beauty shall your eyes behold. And Chazal tells us, now that pasuk is said by a melech, and what does it say about a melech? He got a haircut every single day. Can you imagine going to the barber every single day? I would go out of my mind. I don't have patience for this. It's torture enough to go once in a while to get a haircut. Every single day. And it wasn't a 1-2-3 job. It seems like it was an ordeal to cut his hair. Every hair has to be cut perfectly, every single hair. Melech biyofioi sechazena inecha. Chazal associate a haircut with beauty. When your hair is beautiful, this enhances the vision that your student or followers will behold. If the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva were not just students, these were the generation of melamdim, of teachers, educators. And concerning an educator, the goal is to not just learn the lesson, the lesson, the coursework, but to behold who they are. And beholding who a Rebbe is synonymous with, it's symbolic of a haircut, because a haircut, v'hoyu einecha ro'ois esmarecha, and Chazal's definition of beauty in beholding your teacher is Melech biyofioi sechazeno einecha, which on that Gemara, the Gemara says, how does the king look beautiful? He takes a haircut every single day. So now there's a whole different approach. The avelus of these 24 days, of these 50 days, is not an avelus of, okay, tragedy, terrible tragedy, there's a pandemic, people died, terrible, terrible. No one's denying the tragedy. No one's diminishing the horror. But listen, you know, it's been 2,000 years. Maybe it's time to move on. No, it's a different type of tragedy that has cosmic effects on Klal Yisrael. And the effects are illustrated in the fact that these are the educators that are missing. And every generation, it's a fact, we don't have educators. Okay, the people that are teaching, the people that have been entrusted to teach, unfortunately, it's a drop in the bucket. And those that really have the good skills and know what they're doing are few and far in between. And the wages that they receive are pathetic. It's a reflection that the yeshiva system that we have today is in bad shape. And that hasn't changed one drop in 2,000 years.
That's why we have girls teaching. That's what? Why tomorrow's
Morris, or what's
what does that have to do with the price of tea? A good teacher is a good teacher.
I don't know. He's saying about women. I know for a fact that in certain yeshivas, I was shocked. I think in Chaim Lin also, they bedafk. I don't know how true this is, but they I know by me it would be true that you take big boys in fifth grade, sixth grade, for English, and you give them a female teacher. They behave. They're afraid. You give them a male teacher in school. Boys are boys. They'll draw circles around the teacher. They'll do whatever they want to do. When you give boys a female teacher, you know they behave. So they would really do it in high school. But they can't do it in high school. High school they can't go give yeshiva boys female teachers. I don't have to explain to you. It's just not going to work. It's not going to go off well in the FJJ. But if they would be able to get away with it, it would be an entirely different education system because they actually might learn something. But it just, you know, the system doesn't allow it. But they do so. They're doing it now, as far as I know, in the elementary school, quietly, in the younger grades, whereas in previous years they would never have done it. And in the Hasidic yeshivas, they wouldn't even consider. In the Hasidic yeshivas, the kindergarten teachers are male. And Satmar. He teaches there, what's his name?
Axelrod.
A woman teacher for kindergarten? You crazy? Unheard of. Satmar, a woman to be a kindergarten teacher? Unheard of. In the Litvish world, they wouldn't even have to hire a male. Kindergarten pre-1A are females. A motherly figure. A male, never. And now they know, they always knew this, but now they actually have females. They don't go so far having females teach them Limudei Kodesh, but they do have females teaching them Limudei Chol, even up to the higher grades, by design. Because when you bring a woman into the room, somehow, yeshiva boys, they calm down. Instead of getting excited, they calm down and they behave and they learn something. All right, that's a side topic. But in any event, this idea changes the dynamics of what the Avelis, it's not an Avelis of Stam 24,000 Talmidim, it's 24,000 educators. And based on the numbers, 25 students is the ideal, 600,000 divided by 25 is 24,000. He raised a generation of educators. Educators for the people to look up to. And now that they died, there has to be avelus. And the avelus is in the form, okay, it doesn't answer the question of why in this respect, why we don't marry, but at least answers in the other respect of why, at least does answer why, haircuts, beauty, because beauty represents what you're looking at. You're supposed to look up to your teachers. Teaching is captured in the concept of avelus. All right, I want to go through some of the halachas, but we are out of time. But just the Rashi Prakim is exactly when do we mourn? When do we observe these days of mourning? So this is very, very complicated. And basically, there are different minhagim. There are the Sfardim, the Ashkenazim, the many variations. Today, a lot has changed today for one day segrizim, because today, Baruch Hashem, Klal Yisrael has prospered and has multiplied in big, big numbers. And people want to get married, and it's very hard to find a date, a wedding hall. It's very hard. It's not so easy to find a place to get married. And that has changed the equation enormously. And people who wouldn't be caught dead observing the first minhag, about the second minhag, their whole life they start counting sphere from Chol HaMoed, and they wouldn't get they end their sphere on Lag BaOmer. You find many of these people, because they can't get a hall to marry off their children, except for between Pesach and Shavuos, between Rosh Chodesh, they, for 1 year, they change their custom. Like, I'm going to a wedding tonight.
I have a wedding Monday night.
Monday night, when it's Rosh Chodesh. Oh, that's the last day. That's the last day of Monday night. It's still the last day of Monday night, wait, when is Rosh Chodesh?
Monday,
Tuesday?
They're
they're doing it early. Okay, that's a whole big topic. Rosh Chodesh year is probably the most complex of the mix.
It's 2 days, isn't it?
It's 2 days. The biggest dilemma, the biggest dilemma, which probably is the most attention has been given to, is the status of Aleph Iyar. Are you allowed to have a wedding on Aleph Iyar according to let's say after Shkia. I'm talking about after Shkia. Aleph on the first day of Iyar. It's Rosh Chodesh. On the day, let's say Bo Bayom on Aleph Iyar, are you allowed to get married? So it's this is the minhag ha'olam is no one gets married Aleph. That's pretty much it. No one gets married Aleph Iyar. That's the, I don't know, I shouldn't say that. But that clearly was accepted, even though there were many gedolim that did permit it and did get married on Aleph Iyar. There's Lag BaOmer, there is Aleph Iyar, and there is Rosh Chodesh Sivan. 3 days that ordinarily you do not recite Tachlin, days of celebration. Are these days included in the prohibition of Avelos? Of course, depending on your minhag. And there are many, many opinions as to how about doing this. And it's a Shulchan Aruch, and basically everyone does what they can do. Many people are very lean in many of these things. And the rule is also that even though your minhag may be not like the minhag of the other people, if you are a guest, you are permitted to participate. You're not permitted to take a haircut, but you are permitted to participate in the simcha. You're not getting married. You're not in violation. Someone else is getting married. You're not taking a haircut. Music is not an issue at all, as we started with today. Music is not part of the avelos. Music is something that you should not be listening to the entire year, because of the avelos of the Beis HaMikdash. It happens to be that now, during this time, so we do what we're anyway supposed to do. But just like the whole year round, you're not no one's mach, but I'm listening to music, you listen to music the whole year round, so what's the big deal? So you listen to music tonight, during the Sfira, if it's part of a wedding. Music is not a real violation of the avelos. The only real violation is marriage and haircuts. So if you have a friend, a family, who's observing the other minhag, there's no reason why you can't go. You're not getting married. They're getting married. They're doing what they want to go do. You're not taking a haircut before you go to the wedding. So what are you doing? The music? The music anyway. You're not supposed to listen to music the whole year. Why do you listen to music? Because we're not machmir. No, these days we happen to be a little bit more machmir. But if you can't be machmir because there's a wedding going on and there's music playing in the background, so what could you possibly do? So it's not your fault. It's okay. That's not a consideration. So that's why it is permitted for a person who observes the other minhag to go and to participate in someone else's minhag. But the person who has a minhag has to be very strong in his own personal minhag. You can't go burn the candles on both ends. You can't be lenient until Rosh Chodesh and then be lenient after Lag BaOmer. And even in that, there are so many variations. How to calculate the 30. We have a tradition that the Talmidim, they died during 33 days. What are the 33 days? Does it overlap with Chol HaMoed Pesach? Does it include Rosh Chodesh? V'chulu, and there are probably 10 variations, 10 different minhagim, and people are machmir, mekel, v'chulu. Okay, that is a different topic, but we'll deal with that. Thank you for coming up, boys. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. Enjoy the weather. It's really nice outside. We're going to see you all tomorrow. Tonight I'm not going to be here with the wedding, but my Efski will be giving the shir tonight at 7:15. For those who would enjoy having an evening shir, 7:15 to 8 o'clock. On the other channel. It's not the same bat channel. It's a different bat channel. Okay. BRS.
This is
okay.
It's mine.
Have a good day, everybody.
It's dirty. Wash your hands. Wash your hands. You touched it. You should touch it. Both. All right. Have a great day.
Okay, Mayor.
He comes around here all the time. I don't know who he is. Maybe that was Saft, but he said that's Mayor Baruch. I don't know.
I'm not a big Megan, but I'm
so the Chaira, there were no women teachers by Rabbi Akiva's time.
It doesn't say that. This is
true. Have a good day.
Have a good day.
He prepared
have a good day, be well, have a good day.
He prepared the Moro, the 24,000
men. Yeah. So maybe there were women also that he could pay. I don't know. Doesn't whatever. This is Jewish. I can't even know. Do you know women teachers? I don't know. Dvaira, eighth.
You know. You know why you say by the sphere every day. Hayom, Eser Yom, Hayom Achadusha Yom. Because just to answer your question, your drash.
Yeah.
That you don't make a judgment.